Hey, y'all. Denver football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Baser. I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston. You guys can listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel you can find on any podcasting platform. We are here on Thanksgiving week to talk about Texas basketball, what everybody wants to hear about. The Longhorns came away from the 2K Classic for the loss of Georgetown and a win over Cal. Talk about those two games, what they've meant, and then take a look at the non-conference schedule as we are halfway through. Tell you what we think, and then end off looking forward to McNeese State and UAB. Whew, boys, how's it going? It's been a week.
I'm fine.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody out there in Pretend We're Football World. Thanks for spending your holiday with two nice guys and one buttfuck.
Who the buttfuck is, that's up for y'all to decide. But let's go ahead and talk about real fast. We talked about the Kentucky versus Evansville game. Let's go ahead and bring that up real fast. But with two new teams in Duke and Stephen F. Austin, y'all, where were you when Stephen F. Austin beat Duke?
I was at home.
Yep.
Cool. Just the answers I was hoping for. Real interesting stuff in this podcast today. We are ready to go. God damn it, I want to talk about this.
So we here at my school, we go to school on Monday and Tuesday of Thanksgiving week, and then not the rest of the week. So I hit it pretty hard last night, but I get the ACC Network at my house, but I don't get ACC Network Plus. So I turned to ACC Network and then just kind of periodically hoped, like every 3 or so minutes, like, will they go to the game? Will they cut to a live feed? So I didn't have a feed of the game. So actually, I wasn't able to watch it online. I was on Twitter, like scrolling through, trying to find, like reading through. And actually, the score feed on Twitter did not update fast enough, because then I like saw some of the actual tweets about it. But I've probably watched the turnover pass. I mean, outlet pass, I guess. I don't know, like, into the layup. Probably, at least 30 times, I bet. Maybe more than that by some amount. But it was pretty incredible. On Inside Texas, people have been talking about it a lot, of course. And like, oh, now we need to get Coach Keller because he's better than Shaka. Because, of course. But
have they bothered to look at his record at any point?
Yeah, I know. They went 14-16 or whatever last year, I want to say. Anyways, it doesn't matter. It is funny with Duke losing and with Kentucky losing, and then Virginia Tech beat Michigan State, and then Virginia Tech got shit on the next night. You know, on the one hand, I want to use that for validation of how everyone loses the bad teams, but
Radford.
You know, Duke.
Everybody loses to Radford.
I know.
That's everybody's
right?
thing.
there's just a little bit different as far as like some of the other results are different than what Texas has been in the last couple of years, but it was incredible. Like, I want to say they scored 62 points in the paint or something like that, which is remarkable.
Yeah, they got outshot on free throws, something fierce, because of course it was in Cameron. I watched it on the internet because if you have the ACC Network, you can watch it on ESPN.com. You can go to their live stuff. And the announcers were ridiculous. It was like listening to the Duke version of Dave South. It was they were so far in the bag for Duke that Dick Vitale would want them to chill it out a little bit. Although I'll give them credit, they did get like swept up in the moment and they were really excited by things, and SFA winning, they went nuts over. So, you know, credit to them for that. Yeah. But
I was going to say that end call was really good. I mean, sometimes you get to the ends of big games where there's some cool moments, but the call made is just either bad or, you know, non-starter.
Yeah.
That was an actually good call.
Yeah, the excitement was very organic. It was very authentic. So, yeah, it was nice. Those guys they showed out on that final clip where, even though the guy probably double-dribbled after he got hack-fouled, whatever, it's good to watch Duke lose. Fuck Duke. I'm happy anytime we can shit on them, because it doesn't happen very often. So fuck them twice on Sunday and fuck them again the next Monday.
Yeah, Johnny is still on the fuck other team train. Hey, Johnny, what about fuck Texas? You want to do that one or no?
No, not yet. That may come. Like if they lose to McNeese State, I might let one of those up. I'll say fuck Tom Herman. How's that?
Hey, you and every other Texas football fan. But let's go ahead and start talking about some Texas basketball here.
Yeah, let's talk about the Texas staff that has the most job security right now.
The baseball team?
Yeah, no, outside of the volleyball team and Eddie Reese.
Ed Reese. Yeah.
What about this tennis coach?
That's true. Bruce Burke, let's fucking go. Let's go.
Of course, Tim knows the name of the tennis coach.
Back-to-back number one recruiting classes in the country. Hook them, motherfuckers. Let's go.
but let's go ahead and talk about this Texas basketball team. They didn't get a shot at Duke, but they did get Georgetown's best shot. I do want to bring up this game, and it was a really, it's a worn-out phrase, a tale of two halves, but damn it, if it wasn't true for this game, where in the first half it's like, yes, Texas basketball is fun to watch. They're hitting everything. They're fast-paced. And then it fell apart. It just left their hands. What happened?
To be fair, Georgetown took it out of their hand. It did not fall out of their hand. Georgetown beat their ass in the second half. And the defensive lapses by Texas were repeatable, fairly easy to spot. They didn't defend the pick and roll well at all, and they got beat on it over and over and over again. And, credit to Georgetown and their guards who played lights out and really played the pick and roll well. And I guess this is sort of a side effect of having a defense that is predicated on very good one-on-one man defense, is that if you get beat regularly, you're beat, especially if the team's not going to send a bunch of help defense to sort of cover things. So Texas got their ass kicked in that second half. And I don't know whether you want to put it more on the defense being soft. I mean, maybe not soft, but they didn't execute well at all. Or the Georgetown guards really taking advantage of either the switching or the lack of ability or desire to fight their screens or whatever, wherever you want to put the blame on that, the fact of the matter is Georgetown just really out-executed Texas.
But Texas has this new awesome coach, Yaklich. What happened to that? Where is that defense that Longhorn fans keep on hearing about?
Well, every coach is going to have clunkers now and again, right? Like the fact that they had one bad half defensively, as bad as it was, it's worth keeping an eye on whether that happens again, because in the next game and in the games prior to it, the defense had been pretty solid and they executed well. So right now, that second half of Georgetown is an aberration. We'll see if it is an aberration, a couple weeks, a month from now when we get more of a sample size. But yeah, they just flat didn't execute what they were supposed to do.
So Georgetown went to a 4-flat offense, probably what, like 2 or 3 minutes into the second half.
Yeah.
And they were running basically flat ball screens with one of their big men coming up to screen, and then we either allowed straight line drives or fouled on the way to the basket. God, what would we say, Johnny? It was like 14 possessions in a row. I think that,
yeah, it was a lot. Yeah.
You and I talked that. Yeah, it was something stupid that they scored or got to the foul line 14 or 15 or whatever possessions in a row. But honestly, Will, I think to one of your points, they just look slow. And by they, I mean Texas did. I felt that Liddell and Ramey and Andrew Jones, have just kind of looked, whether it's tentative or hesitant or I don't even know for sure what the answer is, but they just look slow. And I thought that has really borne itself out on offense, through the last 3 or 4 games. But against Georgetown, we just looked really slow defensively and offensively. It just seemed like some guys who didn't really have an ability to take the action to the Hoyas or play with comfort in our own, I don't know what it was. It just was very frustrating to see how unathletic and undynamic we looked. So it was, that second half was was a little alarming because I think Georgetown is probably fine. I mean, I think they're pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. But to have them run such a simple offensive set over and over, and not just for us like to not make adjustments, but actually for us to say like, oh, what do we do? Like, just hold your hands up and okay, I guess they're just going to fucking score over and over and over against us. That was tough to watch.
But at the same time, that offense was pretty dynamic in the first half, scoring 42 points. And it's looked pretty dynamic. It's finally at the point where Longhorn fans are not complaining about the three-point shooting.
Oh, they are.
What is this offense?
They still are.
I mean, they still are, but they shouldn't be.
Yeah, they'll never. And okay, to be fair, the Texas three-point shooting has not been great. They've had a good person here or there. Like, Coleman started off on fire. Febres has had a couple good games. Andrew Jones had the one really good game. But generally speaking, I mean, Texas is in about the bottom third of D1 in three-point shooting. So they can complain. It's not as bad as some places. Like, it's not as bad as A&M, who is abysmal at three-point shooting. They're hitting, like, under 23% of their threes. But it's not great.
Yeah, but the offense has looked a lot better this year. Am I wrong?
In spurts, right? Like, there have been... I think the way I would put it is that Matt Coleman has looked really good.
Really good.
He has been far and away the best player on the team this year, which is great. The problem is that Ramey was supposed to be nearly as good as him, and he is not. And so if Coleman is the only guard who is reliably producing above average results, the offense is going to only be as good as it is when he's on the floor. In some games has looked good, in some games not as much. I think if Ramey can find himself, if he can even return to what he was his freshman year, even if he doesn't, it doesn't exceed that, the offense starts to find another gear, right? If Andrew Jones is more than just a three-point shooter, that helps. Like, there are ways in which this offense can improve that are plausible, but we haven't seen it reliably yet outside of Matt Coleman.
Well, and you know, in contrast to my previous statement, like, Matt's looked fast as fuck. Like, I think you see with him, and he's obviously aided by the fact that he shot, he was shooting like 80% from three.
Yeah, he was like
over the first
7
four
of 11
games.
Or something at one point, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and now he's down to 60% or whatever. I want to say he's still well above 50%. But with Matt, I think what you've been able to see with him is if he is not on the ball, looking for the ball screen up at like the high elbow or top of the key or whatever, they put him on the bottom wing, and he's either a kick out to a three kind of guy, or if that's not open, then he drives immediately. And I think you just see how fast he looks. He just looks lightning with the ball in his hands, and
he's incredibly decisive.
Yeah, and it's really great. Like, it's a total contrast to Liddell, who will catch the ball at the high elbow, and then he'll pump fake, and then he'll jab step, and then he'll like take a quick assess, and then like, okay, now what am I gonna do? Except for like all the entire defense has decided like they're recovered, like they're fine. So now he's having to truly try to penetrate or make his decision against a defense that's ready to go. So yeah, I mean, there's some troubling things, and I guess, you know, like I posed online on Inside Texas, I guess the question is, are they slow? Like, are we slow? Or if we're not, like, is Courtney Ramey not a great athlete? I think the answer is no. He's a very good athlete. But if he is a good athlete, why do we look so slow? Why do we look so indecisive? Why do we look as if we're not able to take advantage of some of these things? Even against a team like Georgetown that has some length and some athleticism. It's not as if we're going to get into the Big 12 schedule or play at Providence or even against A&M and not see some capable athletes. And so how do we start not just executing in this offense, but also allowing our athletes to appear as athletic as I think they are?
Well, I do want to ask y'all, this game did have its downs and its ups. What can you really tell about this team and its performance? What did that performance tell about this team in good and in bad?
I think I'm concerned about Courtney Ramey to a point, right? Like, I think if he sees the three go through a few times, he's going to settle down and he's going to play the game he played last year. I think he is obviously plenty capable of being a good Big 12 guard. I think if he can play to the level, whether it's a level he's capable or just the level he's shown last year, this offense gets better. Things don't become so dependent on Matt. They have, you know, they become more multiple in a lot of ways. And so I am concerned, but I'm not alarmed, maybe, is a good way of putting it. Because we're now, what, 6 games or so into the season, so that's 20% of the season almost. So you're starting to get a sample size, right? Jace, I really need to see him become a 40% three-point shooter if he's going to be just a three-point shooter, right? Like, and he has the capability, and I think if his shot selection gets cleaned up a little bit, he can get a lot closer to that. You know, he shows signs. He's kind of hot and cold. Andrew Jones is, I feel like maybe his first game back set an unattainable precedent, an unattainable level for the season, because people were like, holy crap, he's going 6-6 from three. He's going to knock it out of the park. Like, he should be starting. And the reality is he's not that good yet. Right? He's not back to that yet, right? Like, he is a capable guard who can shoot the ball well in theory, but his, you know, the offense slows down when he is a primary ball handler. And so he needs to return to sort of his tertiary role or his, you know, sixth or seventh man. So that's just kind of where I'm at with the guards, I guess.
Tim, what do you think about these big men, though? It seems like it became a very obvious flaw of this team once they were put up against the size of Georgetown. And on the other end, were your fears kind of assuaged when they played Cal?
Well, Cal's not good enough to really, like, you know, quell any fears. I think what we saw against Cal was a little bit of an interesting twist as far as our personnel decisions. Kai got good minutes. Donovan got good minutes. Will got decent minutes. And that was sort of it, other than Andrew. I don't know how many minutes Royce got, but it wasn't a ton. He played some in the first half, and then almost all of the big minutes in the second half went to Kai and Baker. So that was good. I think that if we can have our freshmen playing not just kind of significant roles, but like capably filling those roles, that would be a really good thing, because they're the most dynamic athletically of our group. I still think Will is probably much more skilled than we've been able to see. That kind of turnaround jump hook was awesome. Was so happy for him to see the ball go through. Like, it's gonna fall eventually. He's, you know, his shot's too clean.
Yeah, even his three is you know, it looks like it should go in.
Yeah, like there's been a couple times where he's rushed it, but even then, like, even when he rushes his shot, so you know, it's like Johnny, I want Jace to kind of be like, his shot selection against Cal was very good. I thought he made good decisions. I thought he moved into the ball well against Georgetown. I thought he actually kind of shot us out of 4 or 5 possessions where we didn't need that shit. So I think he was 3 for 12 from the outside against Georgetown, and maybe 4 for 6 against Cal. Like, anyways, it was bad against Georgetown for a number of reasons, and better against Cal. So I think maybe what Georgetown really showed us is that we're still susceptible, and our athleticism is young enough that it's not really surprising that we're not able to execute Jokic's offense or defensive system in a way that, like, okay, even when we're trying to scramble, we still have this kind of like this base of ability to get us ourselves where we need to be. And then we probably can't have a guy like Ham playing big minutes. We probably can't have a guy like, you know, like Cunningham, like really getting into the game. Not that he did much, but I still think there's some questions personnel-wise that we got to figure out.
Well, it's funny you bring up those two guys, because one of my brother's biggest complaints about this team is Jericho Sims. And he says Sims doesn't have the fire for this team. He doesn't have the want to. He's not a big fan of Jericho Sims. So after these few games, halfway through the non-conference, what are your thoughts on Jericho Sims and how he plays?
I think, respectfully, your brother's a fucking idiot.
I'll make sure he hears this.
Jericho has been, I mean, clearly the best big, which is a low bar on this team, admittedly. But I don't know how much more you need to see out of him based compared, like if you compare him to 2 years ago or even last year for that matter, he's clearly improved. Like I feel like if Jericho Sims yelled as much as Jackson Hayes yelled, no one would be questioning his fire. But the fact of the matter is the dude goes up, gets a rebound and hands it to somebody and his face never changes the entire time. He completes a dunk, face doesn't change. He fouls somebody, face doesn't change. So like they just, it's like they see him not, you know, he's not emotive. That's just not who he is. And they're like, yeah, he doesn't have enough fire. It's like he's in the top 25 nationally in offensive rebounding. Like out of 2,200 plus players, there are 24 of them that get a higher percentage of offensive rebounds than that guy. You don't do that without having a little want to. So, I mean, you know, I get frustrated about this one because as much as I am terrified of the people behind him, Jericho has been rock solid so far this season. And I, you know, other than Matt Coleman, he is the dude I have the least complaints about.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. And actually, he hasn't even been in foul trouble truly since Purdue. I want it noted
that Tim is in agreement that Will's brother is a fucking idiot.
Out of the babe's mouth. No, I like Jericho's game. I like his game. And I, you know, obviously he's from...
But do you like my brother?
Not yet.
He lives in a very shady place. No, I've been impressed with Jericho. And actually, like, I remember talking to him when he was a senior in high school. He came down to the Iowa State game where Texas played there. And it was the year that, you know, Texas was so bad and they lost, like, you know, almost every fucking game by 1,000. But he was, you know, even then you could kind of tell, like, okay, well, he's a different cat. Like, he just has a very unique personality style for a player that's as dynamic as he is. Like, you know, it's you see Texas with players like Kerwin Roach, who's just like so out and animated, and even like going back to like Gabe Maneki or whatever, and like you just guys like that are so out there that you just sort of like that it just almost becomes the persona of the team sort of in general. And Jericho is so on the other end of the spectrum that I think that people have to understand, like, when he figures it out, like when he understands how to like channel that part of his game, he's going to be really, really fucking good because he's already pretty good. And he seems like he's, you know, he seems like he's pretty low key almost all the time. So, yeah, if these last four or five games where he has not gotten into foul trouble is indicative of what he's able to do as far as like, keeping away from some of that stuff, we're going to be, you know, that'll be a huge, because if he can be at 30 minutes consistently, that will be great. That will be really good because then we'll see less of Ham, and then we'll allow Kai to kind of come in as a hot rod and allow Will to kind of still again ease into that role. But yeah, I've been impressed with him.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I missed something. Jericho is not actually 25th in offensive rebounding. He's 18th. So there's 17 people in the entire of D1 that are better than him at offensive rebounding, and he's hitting 82% from the free throw line. So, Will, yeah. Your idiot incredible can go to hell. Happy Thanksgiving, by the way, Baser family.
So, again, talking about quelling fears when it comes to Cal, and after that Cal game, when they held Cal to 45 points, is that something to look forward to as, hey, you know, maybe this is good, or is Cal just such a bad team that it shouldn't even mean anything?
Yeah, they're bad. They're not good. There were a number of times where, like, where Cal had some opportunities, like, especially away from the ball. Man, there were a number of times that game where it's just like, oh, that back door is open. And they stood there. So, you know, that kind of thing is not just a question of personnel as far as like or sorry, it was like system. It was more a question of, wow, they're just not taking advantage. But look, I mean, should we beat Cal by what was it, like 17? Yeah, we should, and we did, just like we should have beaten Cal Baptist by like 25 and we did not. So it's tough to on one hand say we can't learn a whole lot from Cal, but then also beat them in the way that we did. So, you know, and Cal I think would be Texas Tech's best opponent by like 100 spots and on Pomeroy ratings. So, you know, it's nice to feel like they took care of business in that way.
Pomeroy thinks that Duke is better than Stephen F. Austin. We know that's not true.
Well, clearly.
That's clearly not true.
Yeah, but that's settled on the court.
What a ridiculous
notion.
What does
that guy know?
Yeah.
So, and it was good to see. Honestly, what I was most excited about against Cal is that Coleman shot like ass from three and still was the best player on the floor. Like, it would be pretty cool because we saw, you know, Andrew Jones' freshman year, if he was cold from the outside or not shooting well, his game would kind of break down. And Kerwin was the same last year. Like, if he didn't shoot very well, he might have some problems, like, affecting the game in other areas. Matt looked really good, even though he shot not great from three. And even those shots from three that he didn't make, they all look good. They look great coming out of his hand. So, if he is that good, if we have a player that is going to, like, if Matt can keep on creating that type of excellence, or at least very goodness throughout the rest of the year, it's going to really help us.
Yeah, I think.
Very goodness.
Yeah, very goodness. Very goodness. But by the way, I take it back. Will's brother is not an idiot. He's a very nice person. I'm sure he gives to charity. Please don't stop listening to us. We can't afford to lose the listeners.
Johnny, I'll have you know he's an investment banker. So
no, fuck that guy. Holy shit. Oh, my God. Your brother's the 1%. Eat the rich. Eat the rich.
Drain the swamp.
Yeah. Oh, well, I take back everything I said. Both ways. What were we talking about? Oh, yes, Cal.
Fuck him.
Yeah.
fuck Cal.
But I think we did fuck Cal. I think with...
Hello!
It's with a game against a team like Cal, it is hard to prove anything in the positive against a team like that because you should beat them, right? So it's a lot easier to look for or to prove things in the negative, right? Like last year when Texas lost three in a row, including the loss to Radford. Like, some of those teams were not very good, like Radford. And so if they had beaten Radford, it would not have proved anything in the positive, but instead
Radford.
It was something in the negative, right? So
by losing to Radford.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Radford.
So I think in that sort of scenario, what you're looking for, either individually or collectively, is this sort of, you know, they didn't lose to Cal. They didn't let things snowball from the first loss into a second loss like they did last year, for example. They didn't have that funk that sort of overrode things or, you know, sort of rolled into the next game. I don't feel like you were convinced by that argument, Will. That was not a...
No, I'm just looking at Tim, who keeps on pouring, like, shot after shot after shot into his drink.
That's true.
And thinking, that's... Tim... That, how many drinks are you down already? Like four?
This is, I'm pouring my sixth.
And it should be noted that the Coke that he is pouring into that Jack and Coke, there was like 6 ounces left and he got done and there was maybe 3 ounces left. Like, that's a solid half-half mixture right there.
Jack.
Yeah, that's a Jack. A little bit of Coke. There's like 12 ounces of ice, which I don't understand to this
day. I like it cold. I like it so cold. What do you want from me?
He has a 20-ounce glass.
This is not something new.
That there's 10 ounces of ice, 5 ounces of Jack, and 5 ounces of Coke.
I think it's more like 8 ounces of Jack and 2 ounces of Coke.
Yeah, that's probably right.
It's not Jack, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jim Beam. Yeah.
Thank you.
You've got a brand to protect.
correct.
So... His 80-20 jet fuel is ready to go. So Cal, glad we
all
won.
Right.
There we go.
So Cal.
Hey, Will, what's your brother's name, by the way?
Let's not talk about it.
You sure?
Why? John.
John. Oh, that's a terrible name. I feel bad
John
for him.
Baser.
He shouldn't. Nobody should have that name.
JB. That's, I like it.
No, I don't. I don't. I automatically like him even less.
Yeah. Look at that.
Terrible.
Kindred spirits.
Yes, terrible initials. Terrible first name. Honestly, he should just go farm or something. Like, really, just quit it all, you know?
What's his middle name?
Really? No. Let's get off this topic.
Well, no. What's your middle name, Johnny? No. What's your middle name, Johnny?
Oh no, you're not hearing that.
Is it Alan? Is that right?
I wish it was Alan. No, it's not Alan. It's worse.
Okay.
Well, that'll be a good guessing game for the listeners. Let's hear y'all.
Will
best.
Your middle name? Will?
No. Will? Another great game middle for, name, you, for the listeners. Find out our middle name.
Middle name.
Pretend
Will?
You're guess getting to know us. Will, what's your middle name?
Mine's Michael. Timothy Michael Preston. Okay, named after my mom's two previous boyfriends before she met my dad. True story.
Tim, six strings down. Let's go ahead and talk about basketball.
It's true. I'm giving you the truth here. What do you want?
Tim, let's talk about some basketball here. So now we're halfway through the non-conference schedule. They're 5-1, about where we were expecting. But having seen this team, are we going to recalibrate our expectations with some games coming up? Probably the biggest games coming up in the non-conference schedule are Texas A&M and Providence. What are your expectations going forward for the next half of this non-conference schedule?
Yeah, no, good question. I think that probably it's too early to say. So if there's really a biggest critique of Shock this time at Texas that you could have, it's that we have looked good in some of the big moments, but we've looked so comparably bad. You know, it's just frustratingly unprepared and untough and
undisciplined,
unable to be, you know, to be executionally sound. That it's those games that have really killed Shaka, like losing at Oklahoma State and you know, not finishing things off against Radford or VCU last year or whatever it might be. And so, like, am I surprised that we're 5-1 right now? No, we should be 5-1 right now. Like, I didn't think that we would lose to Georgetown. I thought we would beat them and then lose to Duke. But 5-1 is 5-1. Like, no matter who we play, I suppose. Although it hurts the strength of schedule a little bit not to play Duke. What I want to see is I want to see Texas come out and have a double digit win against McNeese State. Hopefully, a comfortable double digit win. I want to see us come out and beat UAB by double digits. Right? We should. We should win those games fairly easily. In the past, it's these exact games that we've struggled with. We beat North Carolina. We come out red hot against Michigan State last year. They punch us back. We fold. Okay, we're still 5-1 at that point last year, right? We were 5-1 after we play Michigan State and come home. Then we drop 3 in a row. Is it time to recalibrate? I'm not totally certain, but do I think we can get a real good sense of this team from McNeese State? Actually, I think we can. I think we can get that if we look like, even if we don't execute well, if we come out and play sound defense and we get, you know, like we get a comfortable offensive execution kind of game, and you know, missing shots is missing shots, but at least if we play smart and do okay, I might be ready to say, okay, all right, this is a year that we can not look backwards and say, well, in the past we've had these struggles. In the past we've had issues with like really maintaining some high level play. And if against these games, against some non-marquee opponents, we can look pretty good, I might be ready to recalibrate.
So I think if we're going to put some sort of perspective of just how bad McNeese State is, the difference between Duke and SFA in Pomeroy's rankings is 30 spots less than the difference between Texas and McNeese State. So outside of McNeese State playing out of their minds in a way they have not yet this year, and Texas just sleepwalking their way through it, they should win that game convincingly. And as far as UAB, that one could get kind of dicey if Texas sleepwalks. But if we're talking about sort of the ways we want to see Texas perform in both of these, yeah, they should throttle McNeese State.
Well, what about the entire rest of the non-conference schedule? We're halfway through it. Where are your expectations going into the second half?
So, are we including the LSU game halfway through conference play? Or are we just talking
about...
Sure,
why not?
Okay, so if Texas plays to potential, they should lose at most two more non-conference games in Providence and LSU. And ideally, they win at least one of those. if they manage to win both of those and all the non-conference, then maybe this team is getting ready to do something special. But I don't, that seems somewhat unlikely to me, given.
And by special, he means like a 5 seed, which we would all take gladly.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's very true. It's special relative to the past few years. A 5 seed, yeah, that's pretty special. Texas has a chance to string together some wins. They have a chance to beat A&M because A&M is not great this year. They do some things very terribly right now. And they don't do a lot of things well. So realistically, Texas has a good chance to put together a number of wins until they get to Providence. And then that's going to be a Purdue-like test for them. Because Providence is a very solid team. It's at Providence, and that should be a pretty hostile environment, which Texas frankly will not have been in a very hostile environment for a while up to that point. We're talking a non-conference record, including LSU, of say 11-2-ish, maybe 10-3, give or take, because I think Texas and LSU are on fairly even terms this year. That would be sort of where I'm at for non-conference expectations. And if they're at 11-2, 10-3, then we're talking about a team that is looking at around a 20 win season in the regular season, give or take, plus or minus one. And so that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to go and say like, okay, we're going to like, we only will lose one more non-conference game. But obviously if we do, if that ends up being what it is, then you can start like, okay, well, if that's the case, if we do go 11-2 throughout the non-conference, 8 wins puts us in. 9 win probably gets us as a positive seed. 10 wins in the Big 12 maybe gets us into, close to having one of those geographical seeds. 11 win almost for sure would. It's like you start thinking about, okay, if we can get to that 11 win number in the non-conference, then every other win in the Big 12 will make that kind of difference. But I think if we can get close to that, it'd be tough for us not to make the tournament unless we just truly fall off in the conference.
We're gonna be talking about it next week, but I kind of want to keep an eye on A&M. I want to get a little bit of a taste test here. What is A&M up to these days?
They are up to getting their ass beat. Is sort of what they're up to. Actually, they've only lost once, but they lost by 30 to Gonzaga, so that's not great. They're not technically the worst 3-point shooting team in the country. They're like 5 teams below them, but they are currently hitting 22.7% of their threes. So it's not great, Bob. They also don't shoot free throws well. They get their shots blocked a lot. They turn over the ball a lot. They don't defensive rebound well. Like right now, there's a lot they're not doing very well. So, put it this way, right? If you look at Ken Pomeroy right now, they only have a 29% win probability against Texas on a neutral court. And generally speaking, on a neutral court, you would expect a team from another major conference to be, say, 40% or so, or higher if it's a higher quality team. But A&M's just not in a great way this year, which I guess is sort of expected because Buzz Williams is completely turning over the roster. They had to get rid of who was it that they got rid of? Not Savion, but somebody. There was a guy who they dismissed from the team this week who's been suspended the entire season. Like, they're just, it's a transition year and it's rough and they're not very good. But, they could always come up for, come get up for a big game against Texas, especially in a new arena where A&M fans are probably more likely to fill it up than Texas fans are.
Yeah, and they're 3-1 right now. I think it's actually pretty possible that they'll be 500 when they play us because they're at a tournament starting on Thanksgiving Day. So it certainly could be a thing where they are not 3-1 as we move into the closer to our game.
And I just noticed that looking at this game, Jericho Sims, in completely obvious off-topic note, Jericho Sims has more defensive rebounds than he has offensive rebounds on average. So
Yeah, you miss shots, factoid. There's more chances. No, I'm just kidding. It's not right at all, actually.
Let's go ahead and get to everybody's favorite part of the show here. And obviously the theme of the show being Thanksgiving, as we obviously made it. You know, it was a very obvious theme throughout the entire show. Mm. Let's go ahead and continue with that theme of Thanksgiving in our Pretend You're Getting to Know Us with the most obvious question that every mother asks at the Thanksgiving table. Hey, gentlemen. What are y'all thankful for?
Well, at this point, so it's November. What's today? Today's the 27th, 2019. My 10-year-old and my 6-year-old are asleep almost every night by about 8:15. I'm really thankful for that. That I don't have to put up with their bullshit after 8:15. Basically ever, like maybe once every 4 or 5 months, but right now they just, once they're asleep, and it's pretty early.
I think I'm thankful for Will's brother more than anything on this earth. Is that he's provided a perfect foil for us.
Just over and over again, throughout the years in this podcast.
Although Tim did also agree that he was an idiot, so that was clear.
He said
you're complicit.
That was pretty clear. In fact, I think from here on out, anytime Will has a somewhat controversial fan opinion he wants to throw out there, he should just say his brother said it, because we've already established.
How do you know I didn't already do that?
No, I think it's established. It's established. I'm thankful for his brother, because it really takes bravado to go out there on a limb like that and be like, you know what, I think something dumb and I'm going to say it out loud to everybody.
Oh, speaking of that, did you guys watch the Shaka Smart press conference?
Why was
Kirk Bowles?
Was Will's brother there?
No, but Kirk Bowles was like, Jared Allen wasn't any good at Texas. Like, he wasn't even good that year. Like, yeah.
Is that what Kirk Bowles says?
Did he
ask Earl Campbell first?
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, Kirk Bowles threw Brian Davis under the bus about that, by the way. Like, he was like, I didn't say that wasn't me. That wasn't me.
Oh, he clearly did.
Okay.
He clearly did.
Well, he's getting old, you know, maybe he doesn't remember what he said.
Jeez.
So what I'm actually thankful for, other than Will's brother and Will, obviously, I'm thankful for Will.
Oh, thank you, Johnny.
If it wasn't
all them Baser boys,
you know what I'm thankful for more than anything is the artist renderings of the new Irwin Center, Moody Coliseum, Moody Arena. What is it called now? Moody Irwin.
Moody.
Yes, the Moody. Yeah, the Moody, Moody Center. I'm thankful for those because they show that maybe the students will actually get seated by the court as opposed to the blue hairs. That'd be nice. I'm just going to keep talking louder and louder until Tim's ice machine gets done with his 14 ounces of ice per drink. I'm thankful for that. I'm thankful for CDC having to decide the fate of the football coaching staff instead of Perrin. I'm thankful for Tim's ice machine for always being really fucking stocked full of ice. So those are the things I'm thankful for.
Yeah, I'm thankful for Tim's alcohol reserves as he dips into number 7.
They are vast.
I guess what I'm thankful for this Thanksgiving is you, the fans. You guys have been listening to us ramble on about Texas basketball. And if you follow on fourth and five, you've been listening for, I think, 5, 6 years. I don't even know. About just god-awful play year after year after year. And you guys sticking through it. God damn, you guys deserve some thanks for hanging out with us and just pretending we were football for the past hour. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And Johnny Brashear, how about that fucking transition?
That was incredible. Also, I would like to thank the troops and puppies and the flag. So that's, I'm also thankful for those things.
And beer.
Yes, that too.
Johnny, where can we find you?
Yeah, so I am on apparently the premier Texas basketball blog on the internet, Barking Carnival. Also, you can find me on Twitter at BitterWhiteGuy. I'm on Instagram, though only in the vaguest possible sense. So you can find me there too if you like photos of dogs every 6 months or so.
I do. I do. That's generally when I take in my dog content. So, Johnny, where in the world is Timothy Preston? So
Tim is...
Be very literal.
Yeah,
very
Tim literal. Has spent the last week carving turkeys for the homeless because he's obviously the nicest person in this podcast. It would probably be helpful if somebody had killed the turkeys first, but, you know, it's Iowa, so what can you do? It's the thought that counts, and really anybody can use those feathers now. So that's where Tim's at.
Tim, where are you? Where can we find you?
I'm pretty sure that's what it sounds like when he gets all up in your fucking face.
But Tim...
And that's where I'm strongest.
Tim, besides the basketball court and the ice machine, where can we find you?
InsideTexas.com and on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S. In my brain, that sounded like I'm slurring my speech.
Because you are.
Delightfully so, yep. Though. It's a delightful amount of slur. Not like I have a problem slur, just like I'm partying kind of slur.
Yeah. Look, I just downloaded Jedi Fallen Order yesterday, and I'm moderately... Well, no, I mean, it's fun. We got a great community at InsideTexas.com. A lot of great people. A lot of great hoop people. The hoop, it's a lot of fun. Come hang out. You're just going to love it. Woo. You're just going
to
love it.
Tim, you are a trip every time we talk to you. But let's go ahead and end it off right there. Thank y'all for listening. You guys can find us in our other shows on the Hornscast channels. The Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there, like Podbean, yes, Johnny, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes, anywhere you guys can find a podcast, you will find the Hornscast. On that note, thank y'all for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook them.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Oh, almost.
Oh, he got us.